Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, July 31st, 2015. Lots of social media outrage over the senseless killing of Cecil the Lion.
Walking through forests of palm tree apartments, scoff at the monkeys who live in that dark tent. Down by the water hole, drunk every Friday, eating their nuts, saving their raisins for Sunday. Lions and tigers who wait in the shadows, they're fast but they're lazy, and sleep in green meadows. Well, that's
Jethro Tull released Bungle in the Jungle back in the 1970s, and I guess it's relevant today. Now, let me be very clear. I offer no support, no rationalization, no defense of the Minnesota dentist who paid big bucks to go wild game hunting in Africa, and they lured this beautiful lion out of a nature preserve and brutally killed it with a bow and arrow. Actually, they attempted to kill it, and then it survived, and they dispatched it later with gunshots. So I make no excuse for that. But I have to say that this week, watching the level of outrage expressed mostly in social media has given me pause. And I see people who are wishing death to this dentist. And what becomes clear, and I'm not the only one to note this, is that there are many people who can generate more outrage over the slaughter of an animal than over the wanton killing of a human being. Whether it's in your own community, in Texas, in Cincinnati, or maybe even in Palestine. And as I bring you these daily podcasts, I have to say that there are always elements of outrage that I feel about the stories I report. And without trying to beat you over the head or over-dramatize or exaggerate things, I hope that my listeners develop a sense of outrage about the injustice that I report on. But when we see people value the lives of a single lion that they've never had any connection to over the lives of human beings, I've been reporting to you about the hundreds of Americans who've been killed by police officers this year already. It's over 600. 111 as of yesterday in July alone. And a lot of people shrug their shoulders as, whatever, oh, those were bad guys, whatever. And there have been many expressions about the misplaced outrage about Cecil and the true issues that people deal with every day. My buddy Bob Kincaid over in Appalachia in West Virginia posted on Facebook the other day. He said, "I don't mean to sound like a jerk, but I think it's kind of a pity that we don't have lions and giraffes and elephants and rhinoceroses here in Appalachia. If we did, maybe there would be more outrage about what the damnable coal industry does to us. A dead animal laying on a blasted coal company moonscape might go a long way toward generating the outrage a poached lion has gotten. One dead lion shot by one sociopathic dentist apparently means more to Americans than their own fellow citizens killed at a rate of 4,000 excess deaths per year." Now, that's just Bob talking about what is on his mind that he lives with every day. And our Facebook friend Cassandra Troy posted a comment thusly: "Too bad we can't manage this kind of outrage when innocent people are gunned down by cops or anyone else. And we're not alone here on the left. Oh, the right wing is trying to use the outrage over the death of Cecil to stoke the campaign to brutally slaughter Planned Parenthood over these trumped-up charges of profiting over body parts of aborted fetuses. And I'm pissed at Comcast. I may get to that a little bit later, but my cable box blew up yesterday. And so I didn't have all of my recorded news programs, and I ended up watching Bill O'Reilly for a few minutes. And there he was, tut-tutting on how liberals think it's okay to exploit dead fetuses for profit. And all of it's bullshit. This is all concocted in a very orchestrated effort to take down Planned Parenthood. We'll get to that in a few minutes. And so I think it's fair to say that you're fully entitled to put up pictures of Cecil on Facebook and, you know, express your sadness all you want. I won't take that away from anyone. But do you understand? When you make a post like that, many people look at it and say, well, that's kind of misplaced. And let me give you an example. Just in the last 24 hours, on the West Bank, a Palestinian 18-month-old baby was burned to death, his 4-year-old brother and parents critically injured in an arson attack attributed to Jewish extremist settlers. Now, this is an ongoing conflict, and people are numbed by it. And they hear, oh, you know, a Palestinian threw a rock and Israeli soldiers killed him, and it's like, who cares? And this is a critical issue because the tensions between the Israeli settlers who are goaded by their government and the Palestinian residents whose land the settlers are squatting on has reached a critical point. The hilltop hamlet of Douma is the scene of this, and the firebombing has been branded as terrorism by Israeli and Palestinian politicians. It appeared to be the most severe recent case of what Israelis call price tag attacks, vandalism of mosques, uprooting Palestinians' olive trees, carried out by settlers in retribution for alleged Palestinian attacks on Jews. And here is a very honest, frank comment from Saeb Erekat, the chief Palestinian negotiator. He said the attack is a direct consequence of decades of impunity given by the Israeli government to settler terrorism. This is the consequence of a culture of hate, funded and incentivized by the Israeli government, and the impunity granted by the international community. We call upon the international community to end its policy of empty statements and to finally do something to protect Palestinians. Mahmoud Abbas, head of the Palestinian Authority, wants to refer this to the International Criminal Court, saying that Israeli expressions of outrage, there's that word again, were not sufficient. And here comes a total hypocrite, Benjamin Netanyahu, who, desperate for his re-election just a couple of months ago, was signaling that Arabs are voting. And also that, as prime minister, he will never permit a peace deal with the Palestinians. So here's a quote from Bibi the Hypocrite. And I have to say his quote doesn't quite make sense, but here it is. It is hard when you stand beside the bed of such a young child and you know that his older brother, who is a year and a half old, was murdered here, and you ask for what was this awful act? We are shocked by it. We condemn it fully. The entire Israeli government, all the citizens of Israel. We decry it as a terrorist crime. Well, typically, terrorism is only used to label acts by Palestinians. And I think this, again, is an outrageous event, and it will likely be a 1 or 2 day story, and then we will move on. Meanwhile, the bizarre plan by the United States, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever and is comical, except for the cost, both in human and financial terms, We keep saying that we're going to train up some moderate Syrians to fight against the Islamic State and ultimately take down the Assad government, and then be friends of the West when it's all over. Well, we have spent nearly half of the $500 million allocated for this crazy, senseless mission. And now the number of fighters has been reduced to 54, who have been trained at a cost of more than $4 million a man. And in an embarrassing move yesterday, it wasn't the Islamic State, it was the new coalition of the Nusra Front, which is allegedly an affiliate of Al-Qaeda, that kidnapped the top dog of America's moderate Syrian fighters. His name is Nadim Hassan. And five or six others were taken with him. And this exposes the sheer lunacy and the fantasy that there are moderate Syrians, that we can train them, and that they could make any difference in this 9, 10, 11-way war that is underway in Syria and neighboring countries. Pentagon training courses in Turkey and Jordan have graduated only 60 fighters. And there is a covert CIA training program that's underway in Jordan, but we're not allowed to know about that. And we don't know exactly what happens when those trainees graduate. Who do they fight with? Who do they fight against? How do you know? And here's the other thing. We've spent $4 million a man on these so-called moderate fighters, but they only get paid $225 a month. There's a whole lot of skimming going on there. And nobody really challenges Obama. Nobody challenges the members of Congress who allocated the $500 million for this folly. No, it's just business as usual. And I find it outrageous. I'm also outraged at what the Turks are doing. Obama made a deal with Erdogan to get the Turks to be more involved in the war on the Islamic State. It's been going on for over a week, and it's clear now that the main targets of Turkish fighter jets are their own Kurdish population. The raids continue in southeastern Turkey and in northern Iraq. Turkish jets again pounded PKK targets in northern Iraq on Thursday in a 2.5-hour operation. They claimed retaliation for an attack on troops stationed near the border with Iraq earlier in the day that killed 3 soldiers. Well, this is score-settling, bloodletting, and it's an agenda that doesn't help the interests of the United States, the Iraqis, anybody. It is purely focused on the desire of Turkey to crack down on its Kurdish population. We're learning that the American drone war is heavily dependent on military contractors. Hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on companies like BAE Systems, Booz Allen Hamilton, where Ed Snowden used to work, and a couple of smaller contractors. They work side by side with the members of the military who conduct the drone reconnaissance and assault raids. And we have so many drones in the sky, producing so much footage every day, that the military can't keep up. And about 10% of the drone warriors are these military contractors. And we're told that they don't make life and death choices, they just provide information for the people who do so. And we know that the Air Force is having trouble holding on to the drone pilots it has trained. They burn out very quickly. They don't like killing people by remote control, apparently. And that's reassuring in some respects. But your money is being spent. Innocent people are being killed on a very regular basis. And we pretend that these are precision devices that only kill the targets we are going after. Well, every day I like to mention people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast, and maybe you share my outrage occasionally, too. People like Mona Kobus, Anna Gordonier. Brian Massey just renewed his annual subscription. He's got a monthly subscription, too. Very generous guy. And let's not forget Kevin Beckley, a monthly subscriber. I'd like to invite you to join them. I need your help to keep this going. I don't always mention it, but some subscribers drop. And I want to thank Ed Lowe. It looks to me like PayPal canceled his subscription, but he just re-upped for a $50 annual deal. Thank you very much, Ed. So come on over to peterbcollins.com and join the ranks of my supporters. Under my picture on the homepage, you click the link that says sign up. It takes you to the next page where you choose $5, $10, $20 a month or our best deal, the $50 annual. You can also choose a one-time contribution of any amount. And my mailing address is there if you'd prefer to use a check or money order. And you can also go to the App Store at Apple if you've got an iPhone or an iPad. Our new app is still being finalized, but you can check it out and download it for a mere $2.99. Just enter Peter B. Collins in the search window for apps, and it'll appear. Distressing news from Cincinnati, where the district attorney was very forceful in his comments about Officer Ray Tenzing, who shot and killed Sam DuBose back in July. And as we've discovered, the official reports filed by Officer Tenzing and his colleagues were misleading, if not downright a set of lies. And in particular, the official report said that he was about to be run over by DuBose, and that's why he pulled the trigger. Well, it turns out that several of the cops on the campus police force at the University of Cincinnati closed ranks to support the false story of Ray Tenzing. But they will not be indicted. The grand jury decided not to issue indictments of police officer, campus cops, Phil Kidd and David Lindenschmidt. And there's a third guy who helped write the report. Well, it turns out that some of these cops have a history of being brutal to unarmed black men and to writing cover-up reports. In particular, the case back in 2010 of a 45-year-old mental health patient, Kelly Brinson, who was in a seclusion room at the hospital, and a gang of officers took him on. They shocked him with a taser three times, and he died 3 days later. Well, in the reports about the incident, Philip Kidd, who corroborated the testimony of Ray Tenzing about the scene with DuBose, and another officer named Eric Weibel, who wrote up the report on the DuBose killing, they wrote false reports back in 2010 regarding the incident with Kelly Brinson. And while it was exposed, they were not bounced from the campus police force. And they were there and available to help support the lies of Ray Tenzing. And all of this, of course, is so crazy because they knew the body camera was there. They had their own body cameras. So why would you think you can get away with falsifying a report when there is video of it? And I've just answered my own question. The answer to that question is, well, grand juries don't like to indict cops. The orchestrated effort to take down Planned Parenthood that I referred to a few minutes ago is continuing. And now right-wing Republicans are threatening to attach amendments to defund or block funding to Planned Parenthood to must-pass bills in a way that could lead to a government shutdown this fall. And there are hardliners on the right like Congressman Mick Mulvaney, Republican of South Carolina. We cannot and will not support any funding resolution that contains any funding for Planned Parenthood. Well, we know, of course, that these phony videos that are trying to provide fodder for the right wing to dismantle Planned Parenthood are highly misleading. They were ambush videos. And they're being treated just like journalism, like they came out of the New York Times. And the partisan effort to eliminate Planned Parenthood is truly a war on women. Planned Parenthood, you know, 95% of its budget is related to family planning, to intervention on sexually transmitted diseases, cancer screenings of both the breast and the reproductive organs. This is very important stuff. But the right wing wants to score points with its base, and they will continue this ugly fight. Yesterday, I dinged President Obama because his lawyers continue to file appeals holding prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, when the courts might let them out. Yesterday, we talked about a hunger striker from Yemen. Today, we have the case of a federal judge who is being asked to release a prisoner from Guantanamo who was picked up in Afghanistan, and we were told he would be held until those hostilities came to an end. This man has never been charged. It's not clear to me if he has been cleared for release, but his name is Mukhtar al-Warafi, a Yemeni man who was captured by the Northern Alliance, suspected of fighting with the Taliban in November of 2001. Keep in mind, in November of 2001, there were people who had joined the Taliban when it was supported by the United States as the official government of Afghanistan, like John Walker Lind. But when things changed, all of a sudden, the tables were turned. So this guy has been held at Guantanamo since 2002. He's one of 52 who has been recommended for transfer. But because he is a Yemeni, they won't send him home. So this is a case before Royce Lamberth in the Federal District Court in D.C. And the lawyers for Warafi argue that President Obama has publicly stated repeatedly that the war in Afghanistan is over, that America's role has ended, the combat mission is over. And therefore, it's the end of hostilities, and people who were picked up in Afghanistan should be released, right? But Lamberth says that it doesn't matter what the president has been saying, the court has to independently determine whether fighting is still going on. But that wasn't the language that we were given about how these men would be held. And so, once again, we have a gross violation of human rights, incoherent policies. Here's the president who wants to close Guantanamo. Here's an opportunity for him to allow the courts to do it so his fingerprints and Defense Secretary Ashton Carter's fingerprints wouldn't be on it. But no, Obama's lawyers are going to appeal that. Now here's a case before a judge in New Jersey. We talked about this a couple of months ago when Governor Christie there cut a deal with ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil was facing a judgment of $8.9 billion for polluting parts of New Jersey. And Chris Christie made a deal with them and cut it back to just $225 million, a reduction of 98%. Now, this is so insulting, and it's ridiculous. But the state court judge, whose name is Hogan, Michael Hogan, challenged one of the lawyers who said this is a bad deal because of all the risks that the state of New Jersey would face. And that's why they're avoiding trial. And the lawyer responded, "How much risk, Your Honor? Did the risks inherent in taking the case to trial justify a 98% discount on the nearly $9 billion judgment?" And what would happen to a case like that if the Trans-Pacific Partnership is agreed to and rammed through the Congress? Well, the negotiators have been working in sunny Maui at a resort in Lahaina, and they've announced that they've reached a deal on the environmental elements. I'm quite skeptical of this, because the deal, while it is supposed to prevent countries from, violating the interests of endangered species and exploiting regions that are environmentally sensitive. The countries have to commit to obeying existing wildlife trafficking treaties and the countries' their own respective environmental laws. But these are so hard to enforce. And the same tribunals that could water down U.S. environmental and labor laws would be hearing cases brought by, say, Vietnam or one of the other parties to the trade deal. And in Lahaina, they're still wrangling over patent and data protection clauses for pharmaceutical makers. A couple of groups are concerned that the terms of the deal will block the development of drugs, keep them priced very high and out of the reach of people in countries with lower incomes. And in particular, biologics, which offer some promise, a new class of drugs, will be withheld from the general trade deal for 8 years after they are released. So we have a statement here from one of the opponents of the deal. The TPP is a precedent-setting blueprint for future trade deals that will deny countries their right to balance business interests with the public health needs of people. And I certainly agree with that. And I just, once again, we have to rely and trust that the accounts that we're being given are accurate about this super secret deal. And of course, I don't trust people who say, just trust me. In Washington, the Senate can't get much done. They're heading out for a summer vacation for most of the month of August. And for the 35th time since 2009, instead of passing a long-term highway funding bill, they have put a patch on it, kind of an asphalt patch, for just 90 days. And this is a ridiculous way to run the government. Some highway projects will have to lay off their workers because the full funding is uncertain. Yesterday, I noted that the British government had shortchanged the Chinese dissident Ai Weiwei. The Chinese finally gave him his passport back. He applied for a visa to come to England for 6 months, and they said, you've got a criminal record, so we're going to give you a 20-day limit. And, of course, the criminal record is all trumped up based on his challenges to the Chinese government. And so Britain's Home Office today told officials in Beijing to grant the 6-month visa and sent an apology to Ai Weiwei for the inconvenience caused. And finally today, I just want to say that Comcast sucks. Comcast is my monopoly cable provider here in the Bay Area. And at home, they've got my phone, they've got my internet, and they have my television. And for the second time in 3 weeks, the digital cable box that grabs the signal and lets me watch too many channels just flat out burned out. And you got to go through a whole routine going to a retail location to trade one box for the next. And I asked the clerk there, I said, can you guarantee me that this will last longer than 3 weeks? And she laughed that knowing laugh of the person who knows how crappy the company is that they work for, but gosh, if they actually say so or hint at it, they'll probably get fired. So I guess I can install the new cable box and we'll see what's on the boob tube this weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.